Oh, and she's blind. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for coming to my talk. My name is Jo Franchetti, and this is my kitten, Puff, importantly. And I am a developer advocate at Dino. We are a JavaScript runtime that you may or may not have heard of. And I am here to talk about stuff that might be going on in your head right now. The last few years have been pretty tough. We've gone through a pandemic, we've gone through a recession, we've seen hundreds of redundancies, an energy crisis, war, genocide, and everything else that is going on. So let's talk about feelings, and let's talk about mental health, and the difficult things that we prefer not to think about, maybe. And who am I to talk to you about these things? I'm not a mental health professional, but I am someone who's gone through depression, anxiety, CPTSD, and I've spent a decade working with a therapist. And I've done a lot of personal research because I'm a nerd, and that's what we do. And I've seen how many folks around me are suffering with the same and similar things that I went through. And I know sometimes stress and mental illness can be really hard to face, they can be really hard to talk about. So I just want to give you some nuggets of things that you can think about and go on, take with you on your own mental health journeys. And the entire of this talk is not going to resonate with you. I kind of hope that not everything in this talk resonates with you. But if the things in this talk don't affect you, they may affect a friend or someone that you work with, and you may be able to share some helpful advice with them. And I only have 40 minutes, so I can't go into a huge amount of depth on these things, but I hope to give you enough that you can start your own journey of discovery. And before we get started, I'm just going to put out a content warning. This talk does go over some quite heavy topics. We'll be talking about mental health, we'll be talking about disordered thinking, self-harm, and politics. So if any of these topics are something that you don't want to deal with right now or at any point during the talk, I will absolutely not be offended if you need to get up and leave. Please look after yourself. That is the most important thing. Keep yourself safe. I should also point out that the content covered in this talk is my own views and not necessarily those of my employer. So, here's a little story. It's Monday morning, you wake up, you're feeling tired, you're feeling heavy, and the dread sets in. You've got another day of work to get through. Getting up is difficult, your head feels heavy, your brain is sluggish. You drag yourself out of bed and dash straight to your desk because you've got a meeting in 5 minutes, because you woke up late. And you have a long to-do list of stuff that you need to get through, which is sort of running around in the back of your head. But instead of tackling that to-do list or even writing it down, you instead check your emails and you mark the important ones as unread because you're going to get to those later. And you read some articles, you scroll through social media, you check in on Slack, and before you know it, it's lunchtime and you feel like you haven't actually got anything done. So you stay at your desk and you eat a sad packet sandwich from a meal deal and you feel the panic start to set in. And then the afternoon is clobbered with meetings, so you don't feel like you actually get to start on your own work until 5 p.m. when everybody finally leaves you alone. And then you try and cram an entire day's worth of work into just a few hours, and by this point you're feeling absolutely exhausted. And you'd hoped that maybe you'd have time for a hobby this evening or to see friends, but you just don't have the energy. So you order some comfort food, you scroll your phone with a YouTube video on in the background just to try and drown out the noise that your brain is making. And as you climb into bed, you realize you didn't leave the house today. And when the weekend rolls around, you're so tired from the week that you sleep in half the day. And you wake up at midday and you feel like you've wasted half the day. You haven't been productive. You're wasting your time. Why are you so lazy? Why don't you have any energy? You think about the things that you'd like to do, but your brain just feels heavy and fuzzy and sluggish. So you cancel the things that you actually wanted to do because you think, well, maybe I'll just conserve some energy and I'll feel better next week. And then you guilt yourself over the fact that you haven't got enough done. And yes, you are resting, but every second that you're resting, your brain is telling you, gosh, you're so lazy. Why are you so unproductive? you're falling behind and you just feel stressed, you feel achy and you feel nauseous and you wonder when it's going to feel like it's getting better. And if any of that felt relatable to you, I'm going to talk through some of the factors that might be causing these feelings and these actions. So first of all, let's talk about this thing here. This is the autonomic nervous system, and this is a system in your body that you don't consciously control, but it regulates involuntary physiological processes. So your heart rate, your respiration, your blood pressure, your digestion, hormone release. It is this system that reacts when you're under a physical threat. The autonomic nervous system is what produces your fight or flight response, and it's designed to help you defend yourself or run away from danger. But if you're under stress, your autonomic nervous system kicks into action by sending messages all around your body, getting adrenaline and cortisol and oxygen to the places that they're needed. But when it does this, physical symptoms can appear. So if your autonomic nervous system is working overtime and you have an abundance of stress hormones in your body, you will sometimes find that you have regular headaches. You can feel nauseous, you can have a shortness of breath, you can feel shaky, you might have stomach pain. And if you're stressed or anxious over a prolonged period of time, then your nervous system is constantly activated. And because it's constantly activated, it can become much easier to trigger. So think about like a cart going down a track. It's so easy for the cart to sort of thud into those well-worn grooves in the road. Your body becomes much easier to fall into that stress response, and it's going to flood your body with warnings, even when the situation isn't actually a life or death problem. And it will frequently cause those unpleasant physical symptoms and can actually take a toll on your overall physical health. And in today's world, with pandemic, economic collapse, house prices rising, industry in turmoil, it's no surprise that we're all sort of feeling a little bit anxious. We're feeling these symptoms. It's an incredibly stressful, anxiety-inducing time to be alive. So let's talk about anxiety. It's a natural part of life. It's completely normal to feel anxiety before, like, a job interview or when you're doing public speaking, for example. It's a normal response to a tough or new or scary situation. And physical symptoms that you can look out for anxiety include rapid breathing, sped up heart rate, lightheadedness, stomach aches, indigestion, chest pain, fatigue, insomnia, and headaches. And in short term, anxiety is actually quite useful to us. It increases our breathing and our heart rate when we need our brain to be more active. It can help our muscles move when we need to perhaps catch something or run out the way. But it's this excessive or persistent state of anxiety that can have a devastating effect on your physical and your mental health. Your poor nervous system is in this constant state of activation, giving your body messages that we're in danger, we need to run, we are really stressed, we need to protect ourselves. And long-term anxiety attacks can cause your brain to release these stress hormones on a regular basis, which can cause problems for your immune system. It can lead to IBS. It can cause muscle pain, muscle tension. You can get headaches, dizziness, and long-term anxiety can even cause depression. And anxiety can stop you from doing the very things that actually help to ease anxiety, so things like socializing or trying new things or getting outside in the sunlight. But the good news is that there are plenty of ways that we can help ourselves when we're in this anxious state. So here are some very basic coping strategies. Firstly, try and remember to breathe. When you're in that anxiety spiral, I like to call it the whirlwind, and I will notice myself getting into this. I will notice my breathing quickening. I will notice my thoughts start to spiral. And when you're in that state, when you notice that state in yourself, you just want to try and take a little step back from it and go, okay, I see I'm panicking here. I can feel my breathing quickening. I need to just remember to slow down and to breathe. I have a little app on my watch that will buzz at me when I have to breathe in and then I will hold it for 7 seconds, and then I will breathe out for 8 seconds. So breathe in for 7, hold for 7, out for 7. It really helps just get your heart rate back down again. And then you can use things like grounding techniques if you're feeling anxious, which will help you get back into the zone where you can slow your thoughts down. And grounding techniques are based on your senses. So we can do things like looking into the distance or looking at nature. We can listen to music or listen to sounds that we find soothing, smell something pleasant like a candle or a nice tea, touch something soft like a scarf or a pillow, and then taste something like a cool glass of water or a nice herbal tea, something without caffeine in it that'll help your heart rate to slow back down again. And self-soothing is all very individual. You're going to have to try these things out and work out what works best for you. Because extended anxiety and panic attacks can leave you feeling just absolutely exhausted and burnt out. And burnout is a state of physical and emotional exhaustion. It's when it'll happen if you're experiencing long-term stress, be it from your job, or if you've been emotionally or physically drained over a long period of time. And common signs of burnout include feeling tired and drained all the time, feeling helpless, feeling like you're trapped, feeling like you're defeated before you've even started, feeling detached and alone in the world, having quite a cynical or negative outlook, feeling overwhelmed generally. And burnout can cause your brain to feel foggy, to feel uncooperative and slow. And it happens when you push and push yourself through tiredness. This is like ultimate tiredness. And if you don't allow yourself the recovery time that your body needs, that is when burnout can happen. And along with the brain fog and the exhaustion and the overwhelm, burnout can actually lead to depression, and it can lead to suicidal thoughts. A lot of the people that I've spoken to who have gone through burnout have talked about just wishing that everything would stop. And burnout isn't something that goes away on its own. It can actually worsen if you don't address the underlying things that are causing you to feel that way. If you ignore the signs of burnout, you can cause actual harm to your physical health as well as your mental health. Burnout can lead to things like chronic fatigue, immune system issues. It can lead to memory loss. If you push past your limits, this isn't something that you can just recover from. But again, there are things that we can do to help ourselves avoid burnout. And it's really important that you take time every day to check in with yourself and to do something nice for yourself. Even if you're working long hours or studying or taking care of young children, it's important to sprinkle some you time into every single day. And if you're having trouble finding places where you can fit in some you time, what I recommend is taking a week to just analyze the way you're spending your time. So split your week up into blocks of maybe 3 or 4 hours. Then for every 3 or 4 hours, just consider how you spent that time and how you felt about it. So did it bring you joy? Did it make you frustrated? Did it make you tired? Did it boost your energy? And just keep a note of how each block of time was spent and how it made you feel. And then at the end of that week, you can do a bit of reflection on what things you know drain you and how much time you need before and after those things, and what things give you energy and how you can work out how to fit them into your day a little bit more. And burnout is absolutely avoidable, and as much as it pains me to say it, it's the obvious things that we probably all know that help us avoid burnout. So exercising and connecting with our bodies a little bit. And I'm not saying you have to go to the gym every day, but getting outside for a walk is great. Eating well, eating a healthy diet that's filled with slow-release carbs and proteins and good fats and vitamins is a natural antidepressant. Like, it's no surprise that when we give our bodies the things that they need, it actually helps them work with us. Practice good sleep habits. I'll talk about this a little bit more later. And don't forget to ask for help. Sometimes it's really important just to reach out to other people when you're in that state, when you're really struggling. I bet everybody in this room knows somebody who has burnt out at some point in their lives. We all have a dangerous tendency to blur the lines between our work and our lives. We constantly strive to be the smartest in the room. We compare ourselves to the experts in our field. So it's no surprise that if we're burning the candle at both ends, there's nothing left in the middle. But there's another reason why we're burning out. And that's this one. If we look it up on Wikipedia, it tells us that capitalism is an economic and political system in which a country's trade and industry are controlled by private owners for profit. The essential feature of capitalism is to make a profit. Capital assets such as materials or land or factories or mines are privately owned, many of which are inherited rather than earned, and labor is purchased in order to add value to those capital assets to produce products that can be sold. And of course, those that are doing the labor are rewarded for their work. People are generally paid to work nowadays. However, in order for profit to come out at the end, the labor kind of has to be undervalued. It has to be less than what it is worth, or the capitalists, the owners, wouldn't be making profit out of the end. And the majority of us in this room are the laborers in the middle. We're working to create profit for a business owner somewhere. Now, I realize that a lot of us work in tech, a lot of us are very well paid. Invariably, many of us are quite comfortable. And we're trying to use our skills and our creativity and our drive and our energy to make better things, to make the world a better place. But there are people out there, the investors, the business owners, the capital owners, who are only interested in making profit. And this is one of the major factors that is causing burnout. Your working hard and wanting to do good is at odds with the intention of people who just want to make profit off you. We live in a world where working hard and producing enough is not always enough to provide us the capital that we need to, for example, buy a house, or for some people, buy food and heating. Hustle culture has lied to us that if we work hard enough, if we produce enough, if we go above and beyond, we can reach this point of comfort. But the truth is, it's not possible for the majority. It cannot possibly be possible for the majority, or the 1% wouldn't exist. There has to be people who are taken advantage of in order for others to rise. And this is a lie that we're fed when we're very small. You know, we're in school and we're getting good grades and we get praised for it, and our teachers and our parents are happy with us. And then when we go into the world of work, our boss praises us when we do a good job. And if we're constantly being praised for what we can produce, we start to learn that we have to excel in order to be worthy. And we must be constantly laboring in order to, for our lives to be worth something. And I hate to generalize, but I'm going to assume that the majority of the people in this tent here were that little kid in school who wanted to be top of the class, who wanted to get the teacher's praise. And we learn to base our own self-worth over what we can produce rather than who we are as a human, which means that we feel like we have to be constantly productive. We live with our own internalized capitalism. We don't even need a boss to tell us that we need to work harder. We're oppressing ourselves by telling ourselves that we need to keep working. And capitalism is like, yes, keep going. That's where the money is made. If your workforce believes that they need to produce in order to be worthy, capitalism will let you work yourself into an early grave and then shrug and turn away as you are replaced. And I'm afraid I don't have a huge amount of advice on how to avoid capitalism. Make sure you help your fellow folks. Listen when people say they are struggling. Give to charities. Volunteer your time. Employ folks from minority groups. Pay people a fair wage and vote next time there's an election. But all of this leads me on to our next letter. Anxiety and burnout and overwork, amongst other things, can all impact your mental well-being. And record numbers of people are experiencing poor mental health, according to the World Health Organization. Globally, it's estimated that about 5% of adults are suffering from depression. And depression is characterized by persistent sadness, by a loss of interest in previously enjoyed activities, by lack of feelings of pleasure or pride or achievement. And depression can disturb your sleep. It can ruin your appetite. It can ruin your concentration. It can affect how you interact with the people around you. It can even affect your memory. It drains your cognitive function, and it can sometimes feel like a downward spiral of hopelessness. And a good prediction of depression is self-criticism. It's that nasty little voice in your head that says, you're going to fail. You already suck at this. You're not good enough. You shouldn't even try. And self-criticism and low self-esteem can be caused by things like burnout, like perfectionism, like imposter syndrome, all of which are very prevalent in people who work in the tech industry, who work in creative industries like we do. Worsening matters, being self-critical not only can lead to depressive symptoms, but then when you're feeling depressive symptoms, your self-criticism can get worse. And depression is a real illness and should be treated with as much seriousness as we treat, for example, a broken leg. But the good news is there is help available. And I know it's easy to say, but there are things that you can do to help depressive episodes. So like I mentioned already, getting outdoors, getting exercise, eating well, connecting with your body can all help ease depressive symptoms. Understanding how to manage your own anxiety is a really great way of helping not fall into those depressive episodes. Understanding the things that you can do to lift yourself out of a depressive episode is very important. Similarly to with anxiety, I talked about maybe keeping a journal of the way you're spending your time. Keeping a journal of your mood can really help understand, you know, how your mood changes with your amount of work, with the number of people that you're seeing, with the amount that you're sleeping, with how your diet is going. Really try and understand what is going on with your own body. And one of the best ways to understand what is going on in your head is to do talking therapy. And getting a therapist can really feel like a big step. I know it took me maybe 3 years from when a friend of mine said, you should really speak to a therapist. And I was like, nah, what are you talking about? I'm fine. 3 years later, oh no, wait. Yeah, that would have been a good idea. It's the best thing I've ever done. I will talk a little bit more deeply about therapy later. And once you've spoken to a therapist, you may decide that maybe medication would be helpful. And much like finding a new therapist, finding the correct medication for you is very personal. It will take time. You may have to try a few different medications before you find one that works for you. Make sure you keep talking to your therapist, you keep talking to your doctor about what kind of outcomes you're hoping for. And I'd just like to reiterate that there is no shame in seeking any of these options, and there should be no shame in talking about needing them with your friends or your colleagues. Okay, so that was quite heavy going. So let's watch Emmanuel the emu for a little break. Oh, have we got volume?
Emmanuel Todd Lopez. Emmanuel.
That brings me great joy in my soul that you listened. I love you.
That brings me great joy in my soul that you listened, is what she said.
Come show them how big you are. Everybody thinks you and Humpty are the same.
Emu are flightless birds, which brings me, emu are flightless birds which enjoy a fight, which brings me onto our next letter. F is for fight or flight. And fight or flight is the body's response to a natural physiological reaction to something stressful, something frightening, something dangerous. And it's activated by your brain perceiving a threat. And it activates your nervous system, sends all the adrenaline, any hormones that you need to prepare your body to either fight or run away. And it allows you in this dangerous situation to keep yourself safe. And we call this, when your body does this, we call this a state of high arousal or a state of activation. and many of the high arousal situations that we face in real life, you know, we're not facing a saber-toothed tiger anymore. It's more likely that we're going to be maybe facing a job interview or a stressful meeting or a salary discussion. That kind of thing is going to maybe activate our fight or flight response. But the problem, again, comes when we're talking long-term. So long-term or repeated stress can cause your nervous system to be in a constant fight or flight mode. Your body is constantly like, oh my God, we're in danger, we need to run, we need to fight. And it can be absolutely exhausting to live with. It means that even smaller stresses, things that absolutely aren't life or death, like having to make a phone call, suddenly become absolutely emotionally overwhelming. And psychologists have realized that fight or flight isn't the only response that we have available to us. There's actually two others as well that people don't talk about as often, which are freeze and fawn. So not only can stress give you the energy to fight or to run away, it can cause you to freeze. It can make your body absolutely shut down. So if you've ever, for example, come out of an interview and you're unable to remember what on earth you said in that interview, that could be your body going into a freeze response during that interview. Shutting down your active thinking is a way of keeping you safe. If you've ever sat and played a game on your phone for hours or doom scrolled, that's you shutting down your active thinking. It's your brain saying, well, we can't deal with this situation, so let's just completely freeze up. If you ever find yourself procrastinating over a task that you don't want to do, that can sometimes be a freeze response. Your body's shutting down rather than doing something that it thinks is going to be hurtful. Like, super helpful, thanks brain. And getting out of a freeze state can be really tough. It's something that you will need to learn to recognize in yourself, and you need to learn to be kind to yourself about how you're going to get yourself out of it. And the other option that we have is fawning, which is a strategy that we learn to get ourselves out of trouble. And it can be a result of interacting with a very difficult person in our past. And it's not just being nice. Fawning is bending over backwards to please somebody. And it's a response that's rooted in trauma. Like I say, it's not just niceness, it's not just being considerate, it's this sort of servile little cringing response that you have that you learn as a way to survive in a stressful situation. So if you're the kind of person who, you know, apologizes when they walk into a room, that is a fawn response. Or if you sometimes find it difficult to talk about how you're actually feeling, that can be a fawn response. One of the ones that I do whenever I have to end a Zoom call, I'm like, thanks so much, everybody. That was amazing. You're the best. Thank you so much. This was brilliant. And it's like, oh, why am I like this? And the problem with fawning is that you rarely put your own needs first. You put the needs of every other person ahead of yourself. And because you do that, you will have a tendency to attract folks who like to take advantage of the kind of person who fawns. And if you find yourself regularly giving a fawn response, try and remember that you are allowed to set boundaries. You're allowed to say no to things. And conflict is sometimes unavoidable. You can't always avoid conflict. Sometimes conflict is just necessary to get past a difficult place and to get your feelings known. Try and, instead of saying sorry all the time, try and say thank you. So instead of sorry I'm late, say thank you for waiting for me. Or I'm sorry for having to call this meeting, thank you all so much for coming to this meeting. Thanking them isn't a fawn response, that's you saying I deserve to have your time and I'm thanking you for giving it to me. I don't want to tell you to touch grass, but please touch some grass. Spending time in nature has been found to help with both anxiety and depression. Exposure to nature not only makes you feel better emotionally, it actually contributes to your physical well-being. It can reduce blood pressure, help with your heart rate, reduce muscle tension, reduce the production of stress hormones, and vitamin D is really good for your body as well and can help elevate your mood. There was some research done in hospitals and schools that found that even just a single plant in a room can have a significant impact on stress and anxiety. And there were some researchers in Australia that did a really interesting study where they asked some students to engage in a really dull, repetitive task where they had to press a computer key when a certain number flashed on screen. And they had half of the group looking out at a concrete rooftop and half of the group looking out over a flowering green rooftop. And the half that were looking out at the flowery green made significantly fewer mistakes than the ones who were looking out at the concrete. So if you can't touch grass, at least look at a leaf. With a lot of us working from home at the moment, we're not getting the time outside that we need. We're not doing our daily commutes. You need to schedule outside time into your day. And working from home has changed quite a lot of our routines. There are things that we need to be cognizant of while we're working from home. So make sure that you are getting the social interactions that you might have had if you were in an office. Make sure that you are helping yourself out of loneliness by, you know, booking meetings with colleagues, making sure that you're seeing friends out of work hours. Make sure you have a comfortable working from home environment. And isolation isn't the only problem that working from home can present. Some people have often also found that being on video calls actually makes them stress because they're seeing their own face. So suddenly they feel very self-conscious throughout the day. And there are things that we can do to help with working from home, as I said. So make sure you've got a good home desk set up. Make sure you're separating your home and work space. If you can do, I understand that not all of us have the space for this, but make sure you have a separate place for sleep and a separate place for working. Have a window nearby so that you can look at a leaf. Try and stay socially connected with people and set boundaries about what is work time and what is not work time. Try and remember that you not only deserve downtime, but you actually require it by trying to be a model employee, by, you know, working all hours and being on Slack at all hours and answering email at all hours. You're actually potentially impacting your ability to do that over a long period of time. You are courting burnout by acting in that way. And secondly, capitalism loves it when you work extra hours for free, so fuck that. And maybe the reason why you're working extra hours outside of work is because of this thing here, imposter syndrome. You feel like you're not good enough or that everyone else is better than you, that you have to work more in order to keep up with your colleagues. Imposter syndrome is the feeling that by fraud or dumb luck, you've ended up in the same place as other people that you deem worthy. And to call it a syndrome sort of downplays how universal this feeling is. It's highly prevalent in skilled and intelligent people, just like the kind of people who are in this tent right now. And people who are skilled and intelligent tend to think that your colleagues and your peers are also skilled and intelligent, and you judge yourselves against them, and you do so harshly and unfairly. And this can sometimes be coupled with the belief that any qualifications or any accolades that you've earned somehow aren't as worthy as the ones that other people have. Have you ever worked really hard to try and achieve something, only to feel like once you got it, you were like, oh, what's this piece of paper? Well, next. Or that now you've got it, someone must have made a mistake in giving it to you, and you actually tricked them. Or that luck had something to do with it instead of your skill and your hard work. You feel like what you've done isn't enough and you instantly have to start working for the next thing. Imposter syndrome doesn't let you feel pride or joy in any of your achievements. So just as a show of hands, how many people in this tent have ever felt imposter syndrome? Yeah. Like I said, it's highly prevalent amongst intelligent and skilled people. But if so many folks around us are feeling like this, there's something fishy going on. If that person that is sat next to you that you think is brilliant and intelligent and skilled, if they're feeling the same way that you do, then something strange is happening. And talking with other people is the best way to understand that imposter syndrome is not only highly prevalent, but kind of normal and incorrect. It's not based in fact. Whenever I'm worrying that the people around me are better or more skilled or more intelligent than I am, I like to think about this thing here. I call it Schrödinger's imposter syndrome. This is a cognitive dissonance that imposter syndrome allows us, where I've convinced myself that all of my peers are intelligent and accomplished and brilliant, and I am an idiot here who will never be able to achieve what they have. But also, my peers are so gullible and stupid that clever me has convinced them that I belong amongst them. Now, these two things cannot be true. They can't both exist at the same time. My logic is fallible, and therefore likely so is my disbelief in myself. So we'd be here all day if I tried to do every letter of the alphabet. So we're just going to have a quick skip, and I realize I've only got 5 minutes left, so we don't even have time for the cute little goat video. I'm sorry. There he goes. Oh, he's already gone. Okay. Well, that would have been perfect, but never mind. Perfectionism is a personality trait characterized by a person striving for flawlessness, setting high performance standards, accompanied by critical self-evaluations and concerns regarding others' evaluations, which, if I was an employer, I'd be like, hell yeah, I want to hire some perfectionists. But perfectionism can actually be a blocker to achievement. Imagine that you're constantly striving for perfection. I'm not talking about excellence. I'm not talking about greatness. I'm not even talking about good enough. I'm talking about perfection. You cannot possibly achieve perfection constantly. You will fail as soon as you set out. And the problem is that perfectionists, as soon as we do fail to achieve that perfection, we don't just feel sad about how we did. We feel shame about who we are as a person. And we engage in this thing called catastrophic thinking, where everything is either perfect or it's terrible. This idea of good enough, nope, that's terrible. And capitalism loves it when we strive for perfection. Capitalism wants us to be trying to be our best, trying to build things constantly, to earn the most money so that we can spend it on becoming even more profitable. And perfectionist employees will pressure themselves into tiredness, into depression, into anxiety and paralysis, all while continuing to turn in perfectly good work, because they're afraid to tell anybody that they're struggling. They're afraid to tell anybody that they can't achieve this perfection forever. And it's a very unsustainable, unhappy way to be, and it can very quickly lead to overwork and burning out. Quiet quitting is something that started trending on Twitter a few years ago. You may or may not have heard about it. Half of the trend being that employers think that remote workers aren't putting in the hours, and half of it being tired folks on minimum wages empowering their followers to resist hustle culture. But if we boil it down, quiet quitting is when an employee puts no more effort into their job than is necessary, or puts in as much effort as they are paid for. It is about resisting the go over and above mentality. And quiet quitting isn't actually a thing, although the media would love us to believe it's a thing. They love claiming that nobody wants to work anymore. But it suggests a norm where we should be performing extra work outside of our job, where we should be putting in this over and above every day, rather than setting a healthy boundary and understanding fair compensation. And with the economy in its current state, people are now sort of realizing that they don't have the time or the energy or the capability to be going over and above every single day. The kind of behaviors that the Harvard Business Review calls citizenship behaviors, so things like organizing team socials or, you know, working late on a project or coming in early or attending non-mandatory meetings, these are the kind of behaviors that can really give a company a competitive edge. And employees are increasingly feeling like maybe they don't owe it to the companies. It's also worth mentioning that for women, for ethnic minorities, and for immigrants, it's often a luxury not to take on these citizenship behaviors, These people often will need to take these on in order to get the same recognition and reward that their peers are receiving. But leaving work on time, not reading emails outside of work hours, maintaining a healthy work-life balance is not quiet quitting, it is just taking care of yourself. Going above and beyond has to be literally that. It has to be above and beyond. It cannot be the expected behavior, otherwise it's just the norm. It's not above and beyond. We're all ready to work the occasional late night or early morning if we need to do a big push, but it can't be the norm, or it is just theft of labor. I would like to remind you that you're allowed to rest. You need to rest. Please rest. Rest reduces stress. It allows your brain time to sort through problems. Make sure you are also making time for yourself to sleep. Sleep is absolutely essential to mental functioning. You need between 7 and 9 hours of sleep a night. In order to have good sleep hygiene, there's a few things that you can do. Get good exercise. Don't drink caffeine before bed. Check your sleep environment, like when was the last time you flipped your mattress? Try and implement a screen-free time before bed. If you ever have trouble getting to sleep at night, it might be because you've not spent enough time during the day reflecting on how your day went, and then when your head hits the pillow, your brain is like, oh, finally, now there's time to process everything. And then it's like, hey, remember when we said that embarrassing thing? So what you can do, set aside some time before bed to just sit with your thoughts. No screens, no phones, nothing. Just you and your thoughts, and process your day and how you felt about it. You will find it much easier to sleep afterwards if you do this. And the final thing to talk about is therapy. This is the best possible thing you can do for yourself. Get therapy. It's like a massage for your brain. The government has absolutely decimated the NHS, so that can mean a long wait, but there are plenty of websites where you can find private therapists. I recommend the BCAP, the British Association for Counselling and Psychotherapy. There's also Pink Therapy if you're queer and you want someone who understands the community. Finding a therapist is a very personal matter. You likely won't find your therapist on the first try. You will have to have a few different meetings with a few different people, try it out, understand what their specialities are, and you know, just see what the vibe is. And you may also find that your employer offers counseling and other mental wellness services. Okay, that was a lot. I hope I've not overloaded you all. I know this talk literally only scraped the surface, and you folks probably already know most of what I said already. But what I hope is that I've planted a few seeds for you to ponder upon and grow over the next few days and weeks and months. And I'm always up for chatting. If you ever want to chat to me, you can get me at This Is Joe Frank on most of the socials. Please look after yourselves, look after each other, look after your friends and your colleagues. We're in for some more interesting times, and it's imperative that we all carve out a little time in our day for some joy and happiness for ourselves. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I hope you have a fantastic EMF.